For zipsportsmedia.com, this is Touchline. Hello everybody and welcome to the very first Touchline edition of 2017. Happy New Year to everybody listening. We appreciate you coming back and tuning into us once again. I've got my co-host with me, Aaron Flanagan. I'm Sean Watson. I will just introduce myself first. Aaron Flanagan sat alongside me once again. Aaron, we're actually recording this on the 30th of December, but it ain't going to go out until the New Year. So, Happy New Year to you.
Yeah, Happy New Year. Did you have a good night?
Well, let's see. I had a fantastic night. I'm feeling better than I did on New Year's Day.
Yeah, good.
Considering it's the 30th, I'm probably feeling a bit better now than I will do on the 1st, but this is the glitz and glamour of showbiz behind the scenes of the podcast. This is a preempting our New Year's Eve, so we don't have to turn up on New Year's Day hungover and bring this to you then.
Yeah, that would be a train wreck.
Yeah, it's not going to be good. We decided to do this now and delay it until the New Year because, let's face it, if you are one of those people that will sit at home on New Year's Eve and listen to us, then we don't want to talk to you.
No, let's be honest. If they're so committed to the cause that they want to listen to us on New Year's Eve, then, you know, that should be number one fans.
Shall we do a countdown? Five, four. No, yeah, okay, no. Right. But if you are one of those keen listeners that really wants to hear us on New Year's Eve, thank you very much because we appreciate your viewership. But to everybody else, Happy New Year. We wanted to start this week with the obscene amount of money that is being pumped into the Chinese Super League. And that's now resonating out of it. You'll have heard that various high-profile players have been offered and lured to China this week in particular. Oscar being the first from Chelsea. Carlos Tevez more recently on, I think, £615,000 a week, which is almost what I earn in a year, but not quite. £615,000 a week, which is just absolutely... there isn't a word strong enough, a superlative or an obscenity strong enough to actually describe that amount of money.
Yeah. Well, one thing I'd say about Carlos Tevez is that he's clearly got a very good agent. Because look at the career he's had. You know, all the hoo-ha with the West Ham, but he managed to get into the British football. Then he's played for City, United, Juventus, gone back to Boca Juniors, earned mega money at all them places. And just before he wanted to retire, his agents managed to get him the most ridiculous gig of all time.
It's not even like he's in the prime of his career. He's what, 33 now?
No, well, he went back to Boca Juniors to retire.
Yeah,
and then he's obviously had this mega off. I mean, it's maybe slightly different with Tevez. You know, with Tevez, that obviously with his work rate and the way he approaches the game, you know, he won't just roll over somebody. You know, he'll go over there, he'll work hard, and he'll, you know, he'll be the same kind of dogged and determined footballer that he always has been, and for that reason alone, I'm kind of glad it's him getting the money, and maybe not, you know, another footballer who, you know, might start walking around and
someone like Balotelli or
yeah, exactly. But because listen, with China, it's very well possible that Mario Balotelli could be offered maybe not £615,000 a week, but you know, £400,000 a week. You know, that's a very real possibility, and it's. Right. It's scandalous, if so.
Surely it gets to the point where you actually think, I don't even need any more money. Surely just... Yeah. What kind of bank account have they got where that's being paid in every week and you're not maxing out? Do you know what I mean?
I've got no idea. I wouldn't know what to do with the money. I don't know, like, what wage... I mean, like, just a small little portion that you'll never have to look at your bank balance ever again.
No.
I mean... Can anyone really blame him? He was going to go and retire, and all he's got to do is go and play for a year in China, and he'll have like doubled his lifetime earnings, possibly. You know, that's the extent of the money. And
I think it works out about seven, what will it be? Something like 30 plus million for the year.
In fact,
it'd be more than that. Somebody do the maths and work it out. It'd be more than that, but it's ridiculous.
It's phenomenal. But as you say, it's not just him, it's not just Tevez. It's like Oscar, who couldn't get in Antonio Conte's Chelsea team. He's now the second highest earner in the world behind Tevez on £400,000 a week. I mean, that's just ludicrous. I mean, he's a talented lad, Oscar, and, you know, he probably needed a move, but...
But would you put him in the top 50 in the world in terms of ability?
No, absolutely
not. You wouldn't?
Absolutely not. And it's... it's amazing, but I mean, you have to look at it, the Oscar situation. I saw a lot of people criticising Oscar for making the movie on social media. You put it into reality, like, bring it back down to our level, this sort of, you know, kind of working class people and stuff. If you were offered, you know, 5 times your current wage, oh, but mind you, it was probably more like 3 times your current wage with Oscar. If you're offered 3 times your current wage with a huge signing on bonus, where you're going to be the superstar, you're going to be the big name, potential for, you know, with Oscar, the fact that he's Brazilian, you know, the potential, you know, for global branding, well, yeah, the branding and, you know, becoming the face of Chinese football in a way. Why would he ever turn that down?
You wouldn't. You wouldn't.
I cannot blame him one bit for doing it. It's just, but...
And it's clear
it's
that
Oscar... ludicrous offer.
Yeah, it's clear that Oscar is the first drip of the pipe, really. He's the first one to really take the offer. We've seen Pella go there, but Oscar's sort of one of the first to take the offer, and he's going to make way for everybody else as well. You know, it's just going to pave the way for a lot more players to go to China.
Yeah, I mean, slightly worrying, obviously. Just speaking off air, obviously, we mentioned the Cristiano Ronaldo offer, which I know we'll mention shortly. That's the sort of thing that it'll encourage, you know, and it is only a matter of time before one of the seriously top name footballers, Lionel Messi, Neymar, Luis Suarez, Cristiano Ronaldo, Gareth Bale, you know, one of, you know, the real top, you know, names in football, just says, you know what, I cannot turn that down. Because if you look at the figures they're offering Ronaldo, how can they?
Do you want to dig them out? Shall we remind the listening public what they are? Yep. So Aaron's just dug it out. So Cristiano Ronaldo, the offer from which Chinese team was it? Can you remember which one it was? One of them.
No, as far as I was aware, it was just an unnamed...
Unnamed team.
Chinese club.
So an unnamed Chinese club has offered Cristiano Ronaldo... This isn't even fee. The fee was 300 million euros, which works out about 258 million or something like that. If he took this offer, he'd be on £2.93 a second, £175 a minute, £10,500 an hour, £252,000 a day, £1.7 million a week, £7.8 million a month, and £85 million a year. Now, this might be just me, but I literally could not spend all that money. There is not enough time in the year to actually spend £85 million.
I mean, it's mad. It's weird targeting Ronaldo. Ronaldo is, well, it's not weird, obviously, he's one of the best footballers in the world, but, you know, he's a businessman anyway. You know, he has all his ventures into, you know, like clothing, and he recently bought a load of hotels. He owns his own private jet. You know, Ronaldo is a brand.
It's almost like you are purchasing Adidas or Nike or something like that, because...
Exactly, but I mean, and all that comes with it. I mean, I think Ronaldo probably earns at the moment about £85 million a year anyway, given all the, you know,
sponsorships and everything else. Yeah,
but to double that again, he's, you know, just on the back of football and becoming the poster boy of, let's be honest, an unknown league. I still now, even the amount of money in the Chinese league that's been thrown there, I don't think I could name 10 players that are playing in that league.
No,
and it's baffling. And
do you think this is a different sort of beast to the MLS? Because the MLS is now a bit of a... It's become a bit of a retirement home for all the past greats, the likes of David Beckham and David Villa, Lampard, Gerrard. This is a different beast.
Yeah, I kind of feel with China, it's not going to be a retirement home as such. The MLS maybe started steering away from the retirement home bit a little bit when they had the likes of Sebastian Giovinco go to Toronto, who's obviously in his late 20s, and, you know, there was a few reasonable coups for the MLS. I think Oscar is a prime example. Well, not just Oscar, Graziano Pella, Asamoah Gyan, who is earning bonkers money over there as well. And, you know, he's still in his 20s, I believe. Might be early 30, but
in or about the prime of the career.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, they are managing to lure players at the right time. Ramirez, he went from Chelsea.
He must have been the first.
Yeah, I think he was. I think Hulk went before him. I think Hulk
from Zenit.
Yeah,
or was it Porto?
He was at Zenit to China.
Right.
I tell you, the point is where you realise that there was real aspirations from China is when Liverpool was so heavily linked with the Shakhtar striker Alex Teixeira.
Yeah.
This would be last January. This is about a year ago now. And Liverpool were close to completing the deal. Alex Teixeira was pictured wearing a Liverpool shirt, talking about his move to Liverpool. And this is a striker who's, what, 26 years old? And China's just went, there's a load of money. And he went, okay. And you realise that's when they mean business. You know, if they can get a top-level striker, someone who's destined for one of, you know, the most ambitious teams in the Premier League under Jurgen Klopp and Liverpool, then and just take him like that, you know, it's just... It's hard to comprehend the amount of money that they're spending.
Personally, I think from this country, I think the first huge name to go over could actually be Wayne Rooney. I could see, because that's obviously been touted and whatnot by the press. I could see him, maybe not this season, but maybe the end of next season, maybe 2 years, I could see him moving over.
Yeah, to be honest, I can as well. I heard an interview not too long ago with, I think it was Frank Noble, who's currently playing for Gillingham.
He's played for West Ham?
Yes. I'm sure it was him. If anyone hears this story and can relate to it and thinks I'm wrong. But I think he went over to India to play, and China and Thailand briefly. You know, he took his family over there, you know, with, like, young children. And he was asked, you know, well, okay, say Wayne Rooney was going to accept it, you know, is the lifestyle there for him? You know, is the, you know, the upbringing there for the kids? And he said it's so far beyond anything you'd ever expect. He said it's incredible, and the fact that infrastructure is there for, you know, a wealthy family to take over, you know, young children and give them an education properly, you know, would only encourage him to go and do it, and he might as well. I mean, at the moment, Rooney's on a cushy enough contract on about $300,000 a week.
Yeah, he doesn't need it, does he?
But you know, if there is no contract renewals coming, then, you know, why not go and do it for a year?
Yeah, break the record at United. Yeah. Dragging out a bit, but break the record, finish the top scorer of United England, and bog off to China.
Yeah. I mean, from an outsider's perspective, for yourself, like, do you see now? Picture the Chinese Super League in 5 years' time. What do you see? Do you see a global league, or do you still see a league struggling just with a few kind of almost like comedy names in there, because it's like, oh, he's come up again.
Do you know what, if they keep throwing the money at it the way they are doing, like you said before, how do people turn that down? I mean, alright, there is the I wouldn't say trauma, but the whole upheaval of moving your family over to China, and it's a complete lifestyle change and everything else, but if you're on $600,000 a week, I think you'd forget about that pretty quickly.
Yeah,
I mean, that's hard to do on £600 a week.
Yeah.
Let alone £600,000. Hard on £600. It's not hard on £600,000. So, if they keep offering the money they do, I can't see players turning that money down. Because let's think about it in terms of a loyalty thing. Maybe 20 years ago, players were loyal to sort of one or two clubs throughout the career. You had people like Brian Robson at Man United, Frank Lampard at Chelsea, you know, one club men, and they are local lads who will play for that club. Yeah. This day and age, I'm struggling to name a Mancunian that plays for Man United. I'm struggling to name one that plays for Man City. The point is, they're all foreign stars anyway. They've got no real loyalty or allegiance to Man United. If somebody comes along and says, we'll offer you twice, three times the amount of money you're on, they've got no reason to go, yeah, all right. You know, there is no club loyalty these days. It's a global league as it is. They can play in China for twice as much.
Yeah.
That's my opinion.
Yeah, I'm just obviously trying to think ahead in my mind ahead to, you know, what is the future of the Chinese league, and there is a rule in place at the moment. They can only have like four foreign players in each team anyway.
Right.
You, almost like the MLS, where you're designated players. I'm sure they'll soon enough realise we need to get rid of that rule.
Yeah.
And I think
the Champions League did it pretty quickly.
I think as soon as they get rid of it, it'll be carnage. I think teams will be offering loads and loads of money for all, you know, a wealth of stars from around the world, and it has the potential for being, you know, a global league, because, you know, you could play them Chinese Super League matches anywhere in the world.
Yeah.
It's not like, you know, all the iconic homes like Old Trafford or Stamford Bridge or, you know, the Bernabeu or the Nou Camp or anything like that. You know, they could travel all around the world and play these matches, you know, with these all-star teams. It really has the potential to become this all-star mega league.
Do you see that happening with sort of the Premier League might just go that way, and the Champions League just merge into maybe a European Super League, or?
Yeah, I think long term. Listen, if China is going to grow in that way, and I'm not saying it is, but, you know, I'm saying it's got the potential to do that. The only way for the European clubs to, you know, to battle against it is to unite. And you know, a European Super League is very real.
Yeah,
I know they're talking about reforms to the Champions League at the moment, which you know are only going to allow 4 from England, 4 from Italy, 4 from Germany, 4 from Spain. Then I don't know whether any from France we're getting in. I'm sure PSG will have something to say about that. But you know, looking forward, the way the game is growing, it's not just a local passionate game. It is a global thing, and unfortunately, I think to keep TV like viewers entertained, I think you know you are going to have to break off. You are going to have to do things like this, and it's going to be interesting to see where it goes. The Champions League one for me is fascinating. I think there's big potential there. I'm not entirely sure I like it, but I know with the Champions League this year, it hasn't been particularly exciting for me.
No,
and I do feel like it's probably ready for a bit of a reform.
I'm yet to see a good game actually. I didn't see the City-Celtic first game, and that might have been a good game. But
well, I mean, Dortmund and Legia Warsaw played out an 8-4.
Oh, well, that's true, yeah. I forgot about that. Yeah, that's a good point.
You didn't watch it. At the end of the day, you don't watch it because Dortmund versus Legia Warsaw is not going to captivate an audience.
Not in England.
You know, if the first match in the tournament is Dortmund against, I don't know,
Real Madrid.
Dortmund, Real Madrid, or, you know, you're going to have...
And I think a straight knockout would appeal more than a group stage because...
You end up
having dead rubbers and nobody likes
it. I'd quite like it to be a bit, you know, a bit shorter, a bit quicker, a bit snappier.
So would I.
Compare it to cricket as well. I mean, look at the Big Bash League in Australia, which is going on now. I mean, it's over and done in a month.
Yeah.
It's there, it's done, and it's a great spectacle. It's a, like, there's a little group stage, and then it's knockout, it's quick, it's exciting, but... Then again, to do that, you're then having to reform the whole of the domestic season.
Yeah, the logistical side of it's not easy, but...
It's going to be tough to change. It pains me to say, but I think changes are needed. At the end of the day, I watch most of my Premier League football, top flight football on TV now.
Yep.
I want to be entertained as a TV viewer.
It's become a TV sport. It really has.
Yeah, I would say, if I want to watch a game of football... like in person, I will go and watch a non-league game, but that's just me as a person who I always have been.
Yeah,
where I enjoy it as a TV viewer, I'll put football on the TV, but to be entertained in the same way that I want to be entertained by a box set or a TV soap or drama or whatever.
You want to see a spectacle rather than the nitty gritty of a game of football.
And obviously, and going back to China and then this potential European Super League or World Super Leagues or whatever, you know, that's kind of what the TV is crying out for. I just think the bigger games, slightly more regularly.
But is there a danger then that the big games don't become big games, they just become regular season games? Because if you don't play Real Madrid every week. And I think the actual... what's the word I'm looking for? The prestige or the appeal of playing Real Madrid every week, it'd soon vanish. But if you're playing once a year, once every 5 years, it's an event, it's an occasion.
Yeah, well, I mean, with the Champions League reforms, obviously, it would mean you have like this. I think that works in that case because, you know, it's like a big game dropped in every 3-4 weeks in between your domestic season.
Yeah.
I think you have to keep the domestic season that it's not. That you wouldn't, because obviously it'd kill the rest of the pyramid. It'd be
it would.
I mean, it'd have no end of, you know, detrimental damage. But I just kind of feel like with the Champions League this year, you know, I haven't been entertained. I haven't, you know, it hasn't had the same appeal. And I do feel like there needs to be a bigger, grander competition. There needs to be bigger matches more regularly. That's my own personal opinion. It's tough to see what's going to happen, you know, in the future. I'm a little scared, a little apprehensive about the potential of China taking over the world.
It's Brexit all over again, Aaron.
It is, because football is completely changing. The way we're going to consume football is going to change again.
Yeah, I think this Ronaldo offer has been a huge, huge statement. He won't leave. I can't see him leaving, but it doesn't matter. The fact that the money's there and it's there for anybody who wants it, that is a statement.
Yeah, no, it seems like all the clubs in China are backing it. The government are backing it really heavily. You know, there's a lot of state money going into it.
Yeah. I feel like we could make a full podcast on this, don't you?
Yeah, I'm just in my head thinking about, God, this is going to happen in the future and all this, and it's just...
One thing we did forget to mention.
Yes.
Mark Clattenburg. Even he's going to China. He's issued a come and get me plea to the Chinese Super League.
Yeah.
That he wants to go and referee over in China because he's such a box office referee.
I mean, I saw that story and he was like, I've not had an offer from China, but I'd like to. It's like, yeah, well, come on, I'd like to go in the space and be an astronaut, but nobody's asked me.
No, exactly.
Come on, Mark.
The football is not about referees as much as he'd love it to be. It'd be another one for his tattoo collection, though, wouldn't it?
What, a little Chinese symbol underneath it?
Just the Chinese flag just down his arm? Or no.
It's just such a massive signal of intent, because if you're going to create the best league in the world, surely you want the best referees in the world.
But let's face it, he
is the best referee in the world.
Do you think?
Yeah.
For box office star, it's going to be Mike Dean, though. Let's be fair.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
no, he's just showbiz.
If you want a character, then yeah. There's a reason why Mike Dean is
he's absolute showbiz, Mike Dean.
Gets so many TV gigs. It's because, he'll entertain you as well. And, it's part of it. You want to be entertained. And
completely agree.
And if he gets the majority of his decisions right, which he does, I know he gets, the odd one wrong. Southampton Spurs.
Fair play to him.
Yeah.
By the way, if any of you Chinese Super League teams do happen to be listening, please bid for Fellaini because you can have him. I mean, I really don't care for him. So if you want to take Fellaini, then he's yours. He's yours for about 60 quid a week, to be honest. But anyway, there you go. We're going to move on from the Chinese Super League. I think we've eaten up enough of your time. I know it's an interesting subject, and I enjoy talking about it. But we are going to move on. There've been a few sackings in the Premier League since we've last got together. The first one was Alan Pardew. I think we saw that one coming.
You say saw it coming. You always thought they're struggling, but I thought he was going to be given a little bit more time, even more time. And maybe they've made, this by pointing Allardyce to the point they have, they've effectively saved the season. Everyone's already thought, oh, Palace are safe. Like, that's the mindset of pretty much everybody now.
Yeah.
But I think
He's still got 4 years left in his Newcastle contract as well, so he can always nip back to St James's.
Yeah. Pardew was just on a poor run of form, and shame for him that happened, 3 days before Christmas. But he got a nice 4.8 million pound payoff.
Yes, not a bad P45 in his Christmas stocking.
Yeah.
What do you make of the Allardyce appointment? Because I didn't think he'd be back in football. To be honest, I thought he might have been done.
To be honest, I'm not surprised he's back in there, because he took the England job with a view to doing it for 4 years.
Right.
Do a World Cup, do a Euros, let's see what happens, let's take over the world, because that's what England were going to do under him. or something like that.
That's what he said.
I'm sure we said that when Roy Hodgson got appointed.
No, every year there's hope, every year there's disappointment.
But, so for him to only go and manage one game, and then, he's got 4 years of his life planned out in football, and then to manage one game and go, oh, I'm just going to call it quits now. Yeah, you can't really do that. Not many people would do, and he'll still have that hunger in him. Inside his mind, he's still an active football manager, so he'll be thinking, oh, I need to get in there.
I suppose he wouldn't want to go out on the note he did. He probably wants to right his wrongs to an extent. I mean, yeah. there is a danger now that is what he'll be remembered for in his England career. In his career.
Yeah.
The England job, but...
Yeah, the timing for us as well, it feels like Allardyce has come back so quickly.
Yeah.
For him, the time from him getting sacked as England manager, going on his holidays and waiting, will have just dragged.
Yeah.
It will have dragged. It was like 3 months of just torment in his head, and he will have been, gagging to get back in there. And, Palace is one of the perfect jobs for him. They'll have a reasonable budget to make him, to help him make any changes that he needs. He'll stiffen them up, and they're a good club, well supported, and you'd expect that he'll keep them up.
Yeah, and I think Pardew will be back sooner rather than later. I actually think the first vacancy in the Premier League, whether it be Mike Phelan at Hull or somebody like that, he'll be back.
Yeah. Well, Pardew could have gone straight into the Swansea job.
Yeah. Who do you think will get that, incidentally?
It sounds like Paul Clement is going to get it. That sounds like very likely, which I think is, if I'm being perfectly honest, a bit of a bizarre appointment.
Mm.
Clement's last proper managing job on his own was with Derby, and he failed
badly.
Obviously, he's an assistant. He's a coach and an assistant, and has a great partnership with the likes of Carlo Ancelotti on the European stage.
I know Gary Rowett was mentioned as well.
Yeah, I was going to say, because Rowett would be the one I'd pick.
Same here.
I think Rowett is, all right, he doesn't have Premier League experience, but he has experience of taking a team right, you know, kind of from the depths of a division, struggling, no money, you know, having to just, you know, work hard on your own resources. That's exactly what Swansea need right now.
Yeah.
Might not be the most prettiest football. It might not be the same liquid football or whatever that they played under Martinez and Laudrup and...
That's been gone for a few years, though, hasn't it? So
yeah, I think Swansea just want to get back to winning games, and you know, Rowett would make them tough to beat.
I think they want to be in a position where they can start again next season. If they get relegated, yeah, they're in trouble. But if they can survive and just start fresh next year,
yeah. The real frustrating thing with all these foreign owners. Obviously, Swansea have American owners in who I don't know them. I don't really know the background, but I'm assuming they don't know loads and loads about soccer as such.
Yeah,
I can't believe I just called it soccer, but that's the point. I don't
let yourself
believe,
out.
I don't believe that they know loads, and I think they'll be going for more of a, what they will see as a bit of a glamour appointment. Someone who always got connections with Real Madrid and Bayern Munich, in, you know, with Clement.
So by that token, can you see Ryan Giggs getting a sniff?
Giggs obviously had a meeting with the Swansea. The Swansea board, but the last time it was up when Bob Bradley got appointed, created a PowerPoint presentation, you know, and did all that with.
How did he not get it? PowerPoint.
Yeah, he was asked to. You know, all the candidates. Bob Bradley must have had a bloody good one.
With links and everything.
Giggs seemed to basically say that. While Swansea were interested in him, he found out bits about Swansea that he didn't particularly like, and he didn't think they would fit into his model. So I'm not surprised to see that, you know, well, not surprised to see him linked again, but again, I'm not surprised to see him, you know, back away. If it wasn't right 90 days ago, it's not going to be right now.
No, maybe not. I think he needs a free hit, Giggs, at first.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean? A job where nobody expects him to keep a team up or something like that, just to get his foot in, dip his toe in.
Yeah, well, he did that with United when they were in free fall, and they still ended up in free fall, didn't they, when he was caretaker boss. But no, Giggs needs a... I'm just putting it out there. Salford City, right? He could get the time and whatever if he went and managed Salford City in non-league, and he'd learn how to manage at that level. He'd learn so many skills. And now I don't wish, you know, John Owen Bernard to get sacked from Salford, but
he'd make a belting documentary next year.
The Salford are already making moves to, you know, to suggest that they are willing to make changes quite quickly. The management team, John Owen and Bernard, at the moment they don't have a say in the players' budgets and whether players go out on loan. That's done by Gary Neville.
Right.
So it's already done by the class of 92.
Yeah.
So it wouldn't surprise me to see one of the class of 92 in the foreseeable future, you know, in the dugout. And it might be the right place for Ryan Giggs to start, you know, get a couple of years of experience at a, you know, a real dogged, determined level. Learn the ugly side of the game as a manager in a weird way, and then, you know, try and take that into the professional game and see where he ends up.
Definitely. Interesting opinion. Did you think Bob Bradley would get longer at Swansea? I mean, 11 games, that is just no time to implement what your philosophies are. And
yeah, I was listening to one of the radio stations not long ago, and it was a Swansea fan saying, oh, Bradley must go, he must go, we need to start giving managers time. And I go, what? What is going? Yeah, the Monk should have been given longer, but, you know, we need to, you know, we should have given him longer, we need to give managers time. But Bradley's wrong and he needs to go. I was like, well, I've got no idea.
This is probably why I got sacked.
I know, but
this is probably what the owners are saying.
Yeah, no, I'm maybe a little surprised that he got sacked so soon.
Hmm.
But it clearly wasn't working.
Well, he said something like, "Well, only because I called the pitch a field, the field, and that's why he got sacked." All his Americanisms are the reason he got sacked. But
no, he's come out really bitter. He's done about three or four interviews in a few days since. Like, he's done another one today, saying. What did he call the Swansea boys? He called them something like, they were afraid or something, or they were scared, or and it's just like scared of what? Scared of relegation? Of course they would be, because at the end of the day, you're not winning games, and when you need a drastic change, Swansea's board will be panicking at the moment because they know if they drop out of the Premier League, they're losing massive revenue given the
without
team.
A doubt. Without
so
a doubt.
They need to stay in that league, and their first major decision failed as a board. And from a Swansea fan's perspective, they'll probably be quite happy that they've been a little proactive and said, right, we've made a mistake, let's rectify it now.
Well, yeah.
This next appointment is very, very important, and I fear that with Paul Clement, they're making another mistake.
On that note, who do you see going down this season? Are Hull a certainty to go down? They've not looked particularly...
For me, they show little glimmers every now and again where you think, oh, they have got something. And I like Mike Phelan.
So do I.
He's a proper football man and he speaks sense. If you just sit and listen to him and what he says and you think, actually, you know, everything you said, he says is just common sense. You look at the squad, and the squad, are any of them Premier League players? And that's literally go from front to back.
Yeah.
And you maybe say Robert Snodgrass.
Snodgrass, Dawson, maybe a few years ago he probably was, but...
Well, as I say, a few years ago, I say Snodgrass is their best player, and he still, for me, is a Premier League player.
Yeah, yeah.
They're a second-tier team. Well, as a squad, is second-tier players. So, you know, they're going to need to get very, very lucky, I think, if they stay up. They're going to have to hit a bit of a rhythm.
Yeah.
They're going to have to stumble across a three-at-the-back formation that works wonders or, you know, something.
Yeah.
Along, you know, Antonio Conte's lines or I don't know what.
Might be worth a go.
They need something to change. And, you know, I hope they stick with Mike Phelan because, for me, Phelan is not the problem. It's the squad. It's what you got left. For them, you know, it's going to be tough. The squad just isn't quite good enough.
Yeah. Hull, I think Swansea might be in trouble. Who's your third team?
I'm starting to fear a little bit for Middlesbrough, which is a shame because I like them as a club. And yeah. I think, you know, they've got a few talents in there. I like Aitor Karanka. But as I say, I'm starting just to worry slightly for them.
Saying that, it was a great 5-0 win at Old Trafford on New Year's Eve, though, for Middlesbrough.
Yeah, absolutely. absolutely. But, no, I'm not quite feeling that Middlesbrough are safe for them. And they're maybe the ones I'd say. I was just trying to think then of, you know, who else might be in it. And I was thinking...
The Palace is the one, isn't it? But...
Yeah, the name that came to mind was Burnley, and I went, Burnley won't go down. Which, I mean, it shows how far they've come. In my mind, I'm thinking, they can't. They're too good at home. They're too dogged defensively. They work hard. Burnley have really impressed me this season. Impressed. I know on the road they seem to struggle.
Yeah, but I think every team that's come up does. They've got to make the home ground a fortress, and I think Burnley have actually done that.
Yeah, and as I say, they've got a good manager, so they've... For me, got enough in place.
With an expensive watch as well, Sean Dyche. I don't know if you saw that story yesterday.
£45,000
watch. Ridiculous. Absolutely obscene.
Nobody in Burnley has got £45,000 to their name.
He must have been offered some big money by the Chinese Super League or something. So, apparently Sean Dyche has got the most expensive watch out of all the Premier League managers.
Yeah.
Saw that story yesterday.
Yeah. Bob Bradley had a 40 quid watch.
Yeah.
To be honest, when I saw it, I thought they might be overpricing it slightly. It was a beaten up stopwatch.
He'll be pawning that now. Now he's got no money over the new year. He'll be pawning it.
I tell you what, after that story, he could probably sell it for something decent.
Probably could, so, yeah.
Buy the authentic Bob Bradley watch.
£41. Make a profit. Do you agree with Robbie Savage's controversial comments that Chelsea are uncatchable this season?
Yeah, I agree.
Do you?
Yeah, I was going through Chelsea's fixtures when I was in the office earlier. Not because I was bored of it. it was genuinely part of what I was doing. And I was looking, I was going, when are they going to lose a game? And the next one I can think of is, I think they play United reasonably soon.
Well, that's not one they're going to lose.
I think it's Liverpool away, right? I think it's like January the 30th or something. And I think they might lose that one.
But by that point, they could be 15 clear or something.
Yeah, and then you look at the fixtures after that one and you're like, oh, it's another three fixtures you expect them to win. And there's not a run in their season where you think
this is defining.
They're going to hit a patch which is going to, they're really going to stumble.
Yeah.
There's not a runner fix like that. I can't see. They're too good. They're too good. And
so bet Aaron would cash, would pay out then now? Bet Flan?
Yeah, yeah, probably. I'd maybe give it another couple of weeks. see how the, make sure that, you know, this fatigue doesn't kick in over, you know, the festive period, because Conte's got had him working hard over Christmas.
Mm.
He's had him in training pretty much every day.
I think the fact they've got no other commitments will help them. No end, no Champions League to worry about.
Definitely. And you see that with Liverpool as well. Liverpool are having a great season, and
yeah,
they look fresh going into every game because, you know, at the end of the day, they get a bit more time to work on what they're doing.
Yeah.
Liverpool are quite fluid with set pieces at the moment. That's one thing I've noticed. And by having extra time in the week, they have extra time to work on set pieces.
Yeah, it's not just game.
Yeah, they play a couple of short corner routines, Liverpool, which there's two different variations of the movement that they do that I've picked up on, and the movement and the fluidity. You know, it's down to an absolute T. You only get that with just practice.
Yeah,
and the likes of City, Arsenal, United, Tottenham, and I've not been able to have that this year because they haven't had enough time to practice set pieces.
Yeah.
And you know, it will pay dividends for Liverpool, and in the same way Chelsea, I'm sure.
Yeah. We wanted to bring up a point that Aaron raised on the last show. Unfortunately, we cut you off, Aaron. We didn't have time to fit it in because it was an absolute blockbuster edition last time. It was about 4 hours long.
Yeah, just wouldn't shut up.
No, we had far too much to say. But we did promise we'd come back to it, and we will come back to it, and the time is now. Give it us again. What was your point?
Yeah, actually, this is Sanchez and Ozil.
It is, sorry, yes. I didn't make that very clear. Yeah,
yeah, no, I'll just make sure I haven't forgotten something else. But yeah, I saw a little debate on Twitter about, obviously, Arsenal's key duo, Mesut Ozil and Alexis Sanchez, are at the moment under contract negotiations, you know, about extending deals. They're all a bit, the futures are up in the air. Both of them might leave, one of them might leave, you know.
China sniffing about.
Yeah, at the end of the day, Arsenal don't want to pay the £200,000 plus per week because it, you know, it doesn't fit in Arsenal's, you know.
This is Arsenal though, isn't it? This is how they are.
That's what they are, and the players are threatening to leave. So, you know, the debate was, right, if Arsenal were going to lose one of them, you know, if Arsenal went, right, we'll pay the wages to one of you, who would they pay the money for? Because who would they miss more? Who's more replaceable? You know.
Okay.
And the debate basically that I saw, it came from a chap who said, yes, Sanchez is brilliant and probably taking a few more of the headlines, but you can recruit goal scorers. You can do that. A man with a touch and the class of Ozil on the ball, you know, is irreplaceable. And it created quite a nice, interesting debate. And myself personally, I didn't know which way to go. Basically, I'm wondering what your opinion is. Who, I mean, you're a Man United fan.
Yeah.
Out of the two of them, I'm assuming you'd take Sanchez over Ozil.
Yeah, and the point I was going to make was this is a little probably a little bit more biased than others would be, because I am not an Ozil fan personally. Yeah, he comes up with bits of class and everything else occasionally, but from what I have seen, he does go missing a lot. Does go missing a lot of games. That's my opinion, and I'll probably get lambasted for that one, because I know the football purists absolutely wax lyrical over Ozil.
Yeah, there's a bit of an Ozil support brigade out on social media that I've seen. It's like every time someone brings out a stat like that, they say, "Oh no, here's his off the ball possession stats and things like that."
No, for me, I look at a player and go, "Is he box office? Will he get you a goal from anything? Will he create something from anything?" That's Sanchez for me, that's not Ozil. For me, Ozil's a passenger too often.
Yeah.
And I actually think the same about David Silva. Obviously, David Silva keeps the cogs ticking over. But the box office man who's irreplaceable in Man City team is Sergio Aguero.
Yeah.
It's not David Silva. In my opinion, I might be wrong there. Yeah. That's just how I see it.
Yeah, no, with Ozil, I mean, when he's good, he's very, very good.
Without a doubt.
There's no doubting that, you know, he has world-class credentials about him.
Without a doubt.
And when he is on form, you know, maybe, you know, this lad on Twitter that's always right, you know, maybe you cannot replace that. Maybe, you know, he has just got that touch of class. What I would say, though, if Arsenal were to lose Sanchez, you know, because they don't want to pay the £200,000 a week, to buy a replacement who, you know, who can score goals at a similar rate, you're going to have to pay 200 grand to them anyway.
Yeah, and he doesn't just do that either. He does create stuff as well.
Yeah.
So, who's the replacement that they're going to get for a similar or a lesser fee and for lesser money a week? I can't remember. Precisely. I can't think of one.
Yeah, no, they have to, you know, seriously consider that. The thing with Sanchez well is obviously he can play in a, you know, variation of positions. He's played very much as a striker this year and really excelled as the striker.
Yeah, and it's his off the ball work that's impressive. He works so hard off the ball.
Yeah, in the last match day against West Brom, where obviously Olivier Giroud scored late on, it was Giroud's first start of the season, and Sanchez got put back out on the wing.
Right,
he was excellent there as well. I mean, it doesn't matter what position, what role you give Alexis Sanchez, he's been excellent. I know for myself as a Manchester City fan, I'd love to have Alexis Sanchez.
Without a doubt. I think you'd get into any team in the world, really.
But at the same time, I do feel like with the style of football that City are playing at the moment, I think Mesut Ozil would fit right in as well.
Right.
I really do. I get a bit more excited watching Sanchez.
So do I.
So, from that perspective, I'd maybe keep Sanchez over Ozil.
Yeah, it depends what you want, doesn't it? If you want... the example I always give is... Michael Carrick, people will laugh now, but Michael Carrick does all the work behind the scenes. He gets the team in positions where the likes of Ibrahimovic and Rooney and Pogba to actually make an impact further up the field. But it's because of Carrick that they've got to those positions in the first place. Yeah. And it's an unglamorous job, if that's a word. Might have just invented that one. it's not a pretty job that he does, and it often goes unnoticed. But if you actually look closely, he's the orchestrator, and it's probably a similar thing with Ozil and Silva.
Yeah.
All right, they're a bit further up the pitch, but they do the work that goes unnoticed a lot of the time.
Yeah. I did the same with City years ago when Gareth Barry was like the midfield linchpin, or whatever you want to describe him. But it really was, when you watched him in person, I found I didn't really pick up on TV very often, but if I went, say, to the Etihad and watched City, you'd look at Gareth Barry and you'd go, he's just so calm, controlled.
Yeah.
Everything starts from him.
Always available. Always looking to turn on the ball and move forward.
Yeah, and all right, he's not got bags of pace, but he's never really challenged for the ball. He's always got that little turn to give him, you know, put him in a little bit of space. He's always open and he always picks out the right passes. And, you know, for me, I thought he was excellent for City when he played there. And obviously he's a slightly lesser version of what Carrick has done for United for many, many years.
Yeah, and it looks like Barry's actually going to finish close to, if not the all-time Premier League record appearance holder. I don't know how close he is now, but I know he's close.
He's only about 10 games off or something like that. He's very close.
Is it still Gary Speed who's the holder, or is it Giggs?
It's Giggs. It's Giggs. Barry's now second.
Right.
And he can break it this season, but he has just signed a one-year contract extension, or at least he's been offered one.
So it looks like he'll do it.
So it looks like he's going to be around Everton for at least another year and a half anyway. So it looks like he's going to do it. And,
fair play to him.
Just shows, you know, what an integral role he's played in whatever team he's been.
Absolutely.
Because, you know, he hasn't... Nobody's been able to drop him. That's how valuable he's been.
Yep. If you've got an opinion on Ozil or Sanchez, please let us know. You might think Ozil's the linchpin in that team, or you might think Sanchez. Whatever it is, if you feel like getting in touch and letting us know, we're always interested to... hear your side of the story and your opinions, so get in touch with us on Twitter or Facebook, whichever tickles your fancy. I think that could just be about it, Aaron. I think we've come to the end of our contents page, our subject list for this week, and this year, actually.
It's a new year, remember.
It's new year, sorry.
Remember, it's past. But...
We've come to the end of our first subject list for the new year, Aaron.
There we go.
It's been an honour and a pleasure bringing this podcast to the loyal listeners with yourself every couple of weeks. You've offered some great insights and made a few people laugh, so I appreciate your time and effort and coming on the show every week.
My pleasure.
Happy New Year to you, whenever it comes in a couple of days, and whatever you're doing.
Yesterday.
Happy New Year for yesterday. And I look forward to actually continuing this podcast and taking it on from strength to strength, if I can say that, in 2017. We've had some really good ratings, actually, with this one. We broke the top 50 on the Podomatic Sports podcast, which I am absolutely delighted about. which is pretty good going. Say we've only had 8 episodes of this show. Yeah. We've broken the top 50, and that's down to you listening at home. So happy new year to you listeners. We appreciate all your viewership and your listens and everything else and your shares. It doesn't go unnoticed. Aaron, have a great new year, whatever you end up doing, and we'll see you in 2017. And thank you for listening, and we'll see you in 2017. Happy new year.